The Afternoon Farm News is being sponsored by Metal Services of Blooming Prairie. They provide metal solutions along with Northland Farm Systems in Owatonna, an authorized dealer of Gale, Coon, Coyote, and more. Commodity broker Gordy Kulovitz with Chido Commodities joins us for the weekly ag market recap. And Gordy, what a week. The quarterly stocks report really lit a fire under corn and soybeans.
Well, I think the words I used right off the bat on the day were it was a game changer. And I've seen that comment used again and again to describe what happened. Never been done before. The USDA went back and revised backwards their own math. And again, I've said over and over again, people think these reports are done by guys in lab coats, you know, out in fields examining things and measuring. And there was a time when that actually was sort of what happens, but not anymore. I mean, the USDA has been shoved out to Kansas City. There's only 25% of the staff available. NESS, you know, has to do these on a budget. And more of it's being done by just plain old modeling. You know, they just sit around and sort of figure out what it is. And with modeling, the kicker is it depends on what kind of numbers you input, you know. So if you input record yields, you know, record ratings, you get record yields. Doesn't mean that's what you saw in the field, but that's how they do it. And so, they, you know, we talked about every report almost for 2 years, they cut feed demand. And they realized that feed demand was much higher than they've been saying, so they had to go back and adjust last month's, you know, the last quarter, I should say, carry out stocks number down by $250 million. And that carried forward into this one, taking it down. So basically all they were doing was using the carryout numbers they got, you know, they were using for the crop reports. They subtracted the 250 off of it. They did the same thing with the beans. They just subtracted the number off of the number they were using, and we end up with the stocks number. What makes it interesting, though, is demand was higher than they were forecasting, and so the thought is they'll have to increase that demand going forward because livestock numbers have only gone up, and you know, they're understating demand going forward. So now we have to take the carryout down because, you know, the math works lower, so supply gets smaller, and they may have to increase demand going forward. So if that's the case, without any other losses in yield or acres, it puts even more pressure on next year's carryouts. So then if the USDA does reduce yield at all on this report, and they may or may not now with what's going on, but if they do, it starts putting bean and corn carrots down to levels that are getting reasonably tight. So, you know, and it seems inevitable that if they don't, they'll have to win succeeding reports, and things just start getting tighter and tighter.
How many months in a row did we just shake our heads when livestock numbers were going up and record this, record that, and they kept cutting feed demand?
I think it was something like 23 or 24 months they cut corn feed demand. And again, like last year, one of the issues was that, you know, they had a pretty decent amount of wheat being fed. And, you know, we said, judging by from what our clients are telling us, the wheat crop just wasn't there, and wheat did not pencil in to be fed. So even at that, you know, they were ascribing too much feed going to wheat, when wheat just wasn't in the pipeline and affected a big chunk of the country. And again, wheat's another one. You know, all these governments keep telling us world wheat crops just keep getting bigger, carrots keep getting bigger. Now we've done it. Suddenly our wheat stocks are down substantially from what we were talking about. You know, they dropped our wheat crop a little bit going forward. And oddly enough, they raised spring wheat. And most of our guys in spring wheat country think that number was bogus. So, you know, the Russian wheat crop is, you know, one of the reasons why they're talking about how wheat's running like this. South America had a tough year. You know, obviously our wheat crop is coming in smaller now. And, you know, Australia's wheat crop just went through a frost that may have damaged it, and it's still not back to its record-setting levels from 2 years ago. So, I mean, everybody's wheat crop is coming in smaller, despite what these governments keep saying. And look at the price of wheat. You know, we're up to $5.70 in Chicago, you know, $5.30-plus here in Minneapolis, and over $5 in Kansas City. Wheat's had its own huge rally, despite the fact that the numbers keep saying we're swimming in it. So we're getting to a point where the cash markets are beginning to just say, hey, we have to do our own thing. Tell us whatever you want, but here's what we really think we are.
Well, and then, of course, early Friday morning, I heard about President Trump and First Lady Melania testing positive for COVID-19, and I see beans down 10 and corn down 4 or 5 cents, but yet by the close, corn beans only down a couple.
Yeah, corn closed down 3 at the end, beans down 3. And again, after the weak corn head, closing down 3 would have probably been a normal reaction anyhow. Beans, you know, they had a pretty good break off of their highs, so it's a little more than I would have liked to have seen, but, you know, not deal-breaking at all. And, again, it looked like we had the last 2 days, we had some pretty aggressive selling in here trying to keep a lid on. And, you know, I think the commitment of traders may show the funds had lightened up because we had some pretty good selling into Tuesday's, you know, with the funds on Monday and Tuesday. And my guess is, you know, we had some selling last week. So the funds could have lightened up quite a bit in these grains. And so later on today, the commitment of traders may actually be a little bit of a friendly input. On top of that, since I talked to you last, I was just reading over at the Guardian, this headline from this morning: wildfires tear through drought-racked Paraguay amid record heat. Country faces more than 5,000 fires with smoke reaching the capital as neighboring Brazil and Argentina also face blazes. So they're saying there are 5,200 fires going right now in Paraguay. That's 3,000 more than were there yesterday. And, South America is still hot and dry and going through the same thing our Pacific West is, basically. That does not look like the kind of situation where record crops are imminent.
Why didn't I read about that in any of the farm news sites here in America, I wonder?
Well, if you go to The Intercept, they have an article about how there's a World Heritage Site. It's a big wetland off toward closer to the Amazon. It's on fire. A wetland is on fire, home to, I think, like 1,200 unique species, and it's bone dry and burning like a twig. So, I mean, Brazil's definitely having some issues with hot and dry. This week, the high temperatures reached up to 104, 107 in Mato Grosso for their high temp. So it's still hot. And again, you know, the trends continue until proven otherwise. And so, I mean, the hottest part of their summer is still out in front of them yet. You know, this is like their spring. This is early fall for us. It's early spring for them. And it's that hot already. So the rainy season needs to get going. And right now, with those kind of temps, it kind of crowds out any kind of rain event.
And the livestock, it didn't seem like all the turmoil this week affected the livestock all that much.
No, and it was interesting because, you know, the last couple week or two, we've had these trades where the grains move based on COVID or world trade or something or other, and the meats didn't seem to really pay much attention. And, you know, you look at, like, the cattle. I mean, we had some down days on grains because worries about COVID. They just sort of sat there. It's interesting. The cattle for the last, I'll call it 2 weeks, have been kind of sideways. And it's interesting. We have a kind of a key moving average, and we keep bouncing down to it, and we keep holding on it. And that was the same thing today. We kind of sold off. It looks like the last couple days, the main focus seems to be, at least as far as the funds go, spreading between cattle and hogs. So like today, they sold the cattle off. They bought the hogs back a little bit. And on cattle, there's an important moving average. Comes in at 110.60. And our low for the day was 110.75 on the D, so came right down to that moving average, and we just sort of sat there. Cash market's not doing a whole lot, and there's some talk that we've got some kind of heavyweight cattle out there, which is sort of keeping a bit of a lid on, and we've got to kind of churn through, though. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, high-priced grains typically, you know, we kind of backed off. Cattle were on their highs before the crop report came out, and when the grains popped, the cattle instantly backed down a little bit. So the thought is, you know, we might see some guys moving cattle now rather than keeping them on the feedlot and just kind of idling along until we get better prices. Rather than feeding the bloody things, you might as well just move them on. So that might put a little bit of weakness in next week. Hogs, on the other hand, you know, they're kind of a weird deal. You look at the October, 74.50, you know, cash is really close. So, you know, another 2 weeks, the hogs go off the board. So they're kind of hovering with cash. But the Dece is down at 62.50, you know, $12 discount. And the assumption is once we kind of churn through this, there's kind of a hole in the hog market based on some of the hogs that were slaughtered last spring. And once we get through that, it's back to more or less business as usual, and the hog numbers increase going forward. So some of my hog guys are a little skeptical. They don't think it's going to be that big a break. But right now the market's assuming that, you know, another 6 weeks out, we'll be back to swimming in pork. But even if that's the case, 62.50 is still well off our lows. And but it looks like spreading's been the real big factor out there right now. And, you know, it's kind of been working. So my guess is next week it'll be, you know, more than likely a little bit of weakness, mostly just based on high grain prices, getting the meat guys a little bit of a sticker shock.
And next week, too, looks like an open harvest window. We should be getting a lot more real-world yield results.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, they're all over the map, but the trend is definitely for disappointing to below a year ago. You know, I heard this week from a really good source, 300 bushel an acre corn out of a dairy farm over into Wisconsin. But again, they tend to have smaller, you know, plots. They're not dealing with 5,000 acres. It's easier to get it all in and, you know, do it all at one time. But one of my really good farmers, Northeast Iowa, he's been one of my most bearish clients. He thinks it's the biggest crop in history of mankind. He's getting some harvesting done, and his opinion's changing. His beans, he made sure his monitors were calibrated, and he said his bean yield went from 100 to 12 in one field and averaged 58, and the same field last year was 65. His corn yield last year in the one field was 211. It came in at 168 this year. So definitely disappointed in what he was getting, and that's in Northeast Iowa, which is one of the better spots. So, you know, those kind of results seem to be the one that's more typical than a guy getting 300 right now. And I think as more and more of those numbers come in, I think the market's going to be hard-pressed to keep believing in the record-shattering numbers.
Commodity broker Gordy Kolevets. The Evening Farm News was sponsored by Northland Farm Systems in Owatonna, an authorized dealer of Gale, Kuhn, and Coyote, along with Metal Services and Blooming Prairie. They provide metal solutions.